Welcome to The Greatest, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Greatest. I'm Megan Gailey, joined in my home, surrounded by festive, beautiful decorations that have been put up by my co-host.
Your husband.
We don't just host the podcast together, we also decorate our home and make love together. Please welcome my co-host and husband, CJ Toledano.
How's it going? My number one credit is I make love to Megan. Hi to our parents-in-law who heard that.
They're legally your parents.
But how are you doing?
Yeah, biologically.
Very festive around here. We were like, we're going to be trapped here, so we really went all out. I did. And
garland, wreath, tree, multiple glittered gold reindeer statues. Mm-hmm. My mom informed me that there are two bins, giant bins filled with snowmen she didn't want anymore, traveling from Indianapolis to Los Angeles as we speak. I can't wait to welcome those cuddly cutie boys into our house. Are snowmen? Yeah, they're snowmen. I honestly, for it to be like a snow woman, she needs to have some sort of stereotypical
boobs.
Woman. No, oh, I was going to say like an apron.
Oh, whoops. All right. Well, without further ado, because I do want our guest, our very close friend, fellow Los Angeles comedian, runs a awesome show in West Covina called The Chatterbox and has
so many podcasts. The Male Gaze. Who's Your God? Views from the Vista, which I may be on hiatus now because.
No, it's not.
Movie theater.
It's
okay,
not.
All right. Okay, it's
we'll
not
have
on.
We talk about it.
All right, it's not on hold. It's going. Those are three podcasts right there.
So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our guest, Steve Hernandez.
All right. Thank you, guys. So good to be here.
Megan
said you guys make love. I think together. Which is not the same. You said, CJ, that you had sex with her. But her way was more, it was like, oh, we're fun. This is a co-op kind of situation. I like that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
It was really just that I messed up. because make love together almost sounds like we make love with different people next to each other.
Well, that's fun.
Not what we do.
That's no, not yet. But we'll see in 20 years.
Second lockdown, and we can't even make love in our backyard with strangers. So
no, I said
second lockdown, just CJ and me.
We'll see in 20 years how it all ends up. Hopefully, we'll all have enough money to be part of some kind of LA Illuminati thing. So.
I'm down with that. I mean, like, current situation, this is a me and Megan situation only. But in 20 years, if we're loaded and bored, why not?
Absolutely.
So you're saying, CJ, if you get rich enough, you will become a swinger.
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
Okay, I can't wait. I can't wait to watch this journey for you. I'll sit back and just smile and laugh. Steve, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, my pleasure. I love you guys. I'm so happy that the decorations are up. CJ, did you really hire somebody to help you put those up?
The lights, the roof. Because there's a whole, like, I got to go buy a ladder or you can rent a ladder. And I went to Home Depot and got anxiety from how packed it was. And I got my car and turned around. I just found somebody who had a tall ladder could get on our roof. So yeah.
Good. I'm proud of you.
Everything else I did.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really proud of you.
Are you?
Yeah, I swear to God, when I looked at that stuff, I've never had a home for myself. I mean, when I was older, my dad used to do it. So I just feel like you got married a year ago. You're putting up lights at this home now. Like, it's all, that's like real man stuff. And I'm really proud of you. I'm really happy for you.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, those are the things that I'm totally down for. Like, when I watch sitcoms and like the dads are like falling off a ladder and stuff, like, that's what I signed up for, you know, like to get my sleeve caught on a nail and it rip off my whole shirt. Like, I'm ready for that.
To be a bumbling husband.
Yes.
I could also see CJ like changing a diaper and like opening it and then going like, "Woo!" Yeah. You know,
like, like peeing in your face. Like,
yes. Yeah, a lot of diaper hijinks.
And I'm trying to stop it. But Steve, you are recently engaged. You are joining the force.
Yes. Nobody saw it coming. That's part of why I did it. Very punk rock for me. A lot of people don't understand that.
Yeah.
But it was very punk rock for me. I think, you know, I've been blessed enough to have the love of many wonderful women in my life. And yes. I think I finally got to the age where I was like, what happens if I just let this wash over me instead of fight it? Because mm-hmm. that's what I've done my whole life, is to fight really? The love of all these beautiful, wonderful women. And then I was like, what if you just let it wash over you? What's that like? And I finally was like, okay, I'll just let it. I mean, you know, anybody who knows my fiance, she's so beautiful, so funny, so smart.
Yeah.
And she loves me, I think, more than anybody, which is saying a lot, has ever loved me. And she just looks at me sometimes. She'll like look up at me with this love, like she's trying to crush me with her fucking eyeballs with love.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
yep.
Well, we got to. You've got to fucking tie this down. You've got, if it'll, nothing will make this person happier in the world than me committing my life to them. You got to give it to them.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. And yeah, I know what you mean. No, the crushing looks, the thing is.
Do you feel like I look at you in a way where I could crush you with my love?
Absolutely.
Wow.
That is like, that is what you're describing, Steve, the crushing love. And you're like, I have to react to this is totally a thing that I'm like still trying to figure out how you're supposed to respond sometimes.
You know, what's so funny. I would imagine that's how you are in private, but you two do something that I really love. I think you guys really play up like a sitcom couple in public. Where I have probably five videos of you kissing Megan and her looking away in disgust. They're like some of my funniest. It's like one of the funniest things I think in the world. And I think you just do it in public. Obviously, I believe Megan loves you as much like you're talking about. But yeah, I do think I think it's a heavy weight for a man to finally say, okay, I'm going to take responsibility for this love.
Yeah.
And so I've come to that point in my life. Where I was divorced before, and I handled that. I was a bad husband, and I was irresponsible with that because I just thought dumb things. I was just an idiot. I'm 42 years old now. Mm-hmm. I've been around the block. I'm still an idiot in many ways, but I also know, like, there's times when it's like, nah, don't do that. You remember that 10 years ago. Don't do that again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, I stopped drinking 2 years ago. And there's so many mm-hmm. times when I'm in a situation and I'm a comedian. So the fucking shit will go in my brain. And I'm like,
yep. mm-hmm.
so glad I don't have a drink in me right now. I'm just like, don't say it. Don't say it. You have absolutely no reason to say it. And I think it's worse as a comedian, too, because a lot of times I'll want to say something funny, you know, even to Julia to get a laugh. And it's like, don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, there's no reason for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. We go through a lot in this house of us back and forth saying to each other, you know, you don't need to roast me every day. We are partners in love, and you don't have to go gooby, 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 gooby whenever I say something.
I mean, dude.
Go ahead.
No, okay. Well, no, you go ahead because I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's just like my wife, Megan, she is my best friend, you know, so and that's how I hang. I you know, you're going to have to there's so much time in a day as well. And it's been multiplied by so much during this pandemic that we've either ran out of things to talk about or it's just like we are truly meeting who we really are. And we're interacting with each other. In so many different roles, not just husband and wife, now friends, now coworkers, you know, in a 24-hour day together in pandemic. So
I have not run out of things to talk about. I've got legal pads filled with topics we could get to.
No, I know you guys are part of a crew, too, where there's a lot of married people when they're both comedians and stuff. And I do think mm-hmm, it's one of the reasons the pandemic is one of the reasons why I'm getting married, too, because I feel like. Not just in personal areas, but professionally and everything, this is kind of like sped up how people are thinking about things for maybe like 5 years. I mean, we've come to a standstill in a lot mm-hmm. of the busyness of our lives. So I was able to think about things. But yeah, there's no person that I love. And I know you guys are best friends. Julie and I are best friends. Oh, we laugh so much. We have such a good time together. So it's just like, well, okay. If we ever split up, it will be as devastating as a divorce. So we should get married. And I'm very excited. Yeah, I mean, like, if we split up, and since I've made the decision where I turn the thing and say, where I told you know what, because I wasn't going to pick out the ring. I'm not, I just can't do that. Gifts for me are really, it's one of the few things in life that gives me anxiety. So I told her, hey, you know what, start looking for a few rings, give me a few options, and then I'll pick something. And when I told her that, and we talked about it, obviously, ad nauseum, she was like, okay. And ever since then, my love for her has grown more than it was before. I do feel like there's something about commitment, like in an open way where it allows you to be like, I mean, she was always part of my team, but now I feel like we're going to be publicly a team. So it's like, I will do what, and I think you guys are the same way. We will do whatever it takes to win in this life. And I want to shove it down everyone's throat so they can fucking see it. You pieces of shit. We're going to win.
Wow. I can't even think of someone who would be against your and Julia's team. Do you ever think about that? I try and do this sometimes. Like, I'm like, CJ, who hates us?
Because
we hate people that are obscure that would have no idea we hate. You know, like, there's definitely people I hate that, like, would have no clue I hate them.
So I'm like,
who's that to me?
Oh my God.
I don't think anyone could hate CJ because he's so affable. And kind of doesn't
take
it.
That's not true.
Okay, well, that's just what I think. I think Megan... Yeah,
people, that's what my mom says, too.
Megan, I think people could hate you because you're a very successful woman. So men could certainly hate you. And then women, you guys hate each other for the fucking weirdest reason. So there's that, too. Like, women, like, I'm sure there's some woman, female Chicago comedian, you fucking did something 8 years ago that she... Or 10 years ago. She'll never forgive you.
The fact that you said one Chicago female comedian, I mean, yeah, that the legal pad of topics I have for things CJ and I to talk about is probably just as long as Chicago comedians that hate me. CJ has a best friend who hates me, you know, like, it's fun. So it really is. You know, we talk a lot about Chicago on here. That's where we, you know, comedically come from. Steve is born and raised Covina. West Covina, L.A. For those of you that don't know, for those of you that don't watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, that is L.A. And you, I mean, you're wearing a shirt right now that I can see that says Latino Heat on it. You are, you're one, like, step below Danny Trejo at this point for L.A. mascots, I think.
Well, I'm very unknown outside of it. You know, my Twitter presence is slowly growing. I've got to take more topless pics, I think, to grow the leaps and bounds I need. But yeah, I was born at Pasadena at Huntington Hospital. Grew up in Lincoln Heights, Highland Park till I was 4 years old. Then we moved to West Covina. My dad bought a little 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom house out there with his GI Bill. And then I started doing stand-up 10 years ago. So I would have never left Covina, but I got married. My wife got a job in Pasadena. We moved to Pasadena, and then a bunch of things happened for me, allow me to get into stand-up in Los Angeles. But I am L.A. born and bred. I proposed to Julia Gaselle Park, kind of. There's this area where my dad grew up near the White Fence Hazard Gang neighborhood, and my grandma used to live there. And there's the most beautiful view I've ever seen. It might be the one on Blood In and Blood Out, if anybody's familiar with that, but it's the most beautiful view I've ever seen. My dad said he used to go there after high school and, like, look at the city. You could see the ocean, you could see Dodger Stadium, you could see everything. I'll take you guys there some point. And I took Julia there, and I remember when my dad showed it to me maybe 20 years ago, I was like, oh, I would love to propose to my wife here, because it's such a, it's one of those few places I feel like, you know, I'm kind of a jaded person, like many people in a lot of ways, but where I still feel magic up there. And so I was like, I would love to share this magic with the person I'm going to marry. And so I took her over there right off of Soto Street, right by the Lincoln Heights COVID testing center. Behind that.
Oh, yeah, that's where I go now. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so fast. But yeah. I moved out to Los Angeles proper after my divorce probably about 7 or 8 years ago. And yeah, it's really made me fall in love with the city in a way that just being from West Covina didn't. So I love this place. I love Los Angeles comedy. It's fucked up in a lot of ways, but I do believe in the next 10 years, we're going to see a generation of comics raised that are very, very good and better than anybody else.
Wow. Because, like, We, you know, Chicago comics are, myself, CJ included, some of the most insufferable people in comedy. You know, we're just like, we're the best. We have the most friends. We have the most fun. We drink the most. We stay up the late. You know, it's just a lot. And then, so when we would come to New York, people were like excited to have us. And then there was this like massive influx and people were like, ugh, we're good on you actually. But when LA comics would come to New York, we would just stand at the room, arms crossed, like, who's this hot fucking hack? Like, you just, when someone is an LA comic, especially someone who like started here and then ends up getting any amount of buzz, whether it be like new faces or something, you're just like so ready to hate them. But the reality is it would be really, really, really hard to start here. And I'm happy that I did not have to.
Yeah, it's definitely its own thing. I remember I went to Chicago maybe 2.5 years in, and you realize how hard it is here because everyone just keeps coming here.
Yeah.
So I start here, and the open mics, you know, are 30, 40, 50 people. You get 3 minutes and you start here and you just do as many of those. When I started, I did 10 to 15 mics a week, and they just keep coming. Stars just keep coming. Mm-hmm. But if you can hold out and get good and like figure out what's going on within 3 years, I feel if you can get like pretty good in LA in 3 years, then you'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And you're like very competent. Mm-hmm. So when I went to Chicago that first time, I realized, oh, I've been playing with weights on. Like, it's been fucked up to not have real people all those times, because you learn to be funny. I know a lot of people say in open mic comedy, if you may get laughs there, you won't get them anywhere else. But I feel like in LA, the open mic scene is very, you're like chopping heads. So there's like very competitive, very much, especially, you know, something like the Chatterbox, where that open mic on Thursdays is like a show where we get regular, we get like a crowd of regular people. So we're chopping heads, you know, and I'm bartending on Thursday nights too. So I've got to like serve a cholo a beer, and I go up and start talking about sucking dick, and I come back and get the cholo another beer. I mean, I really am like that. The thing I'm most proud of so far is the crew coming up at the Chatterbox, where now, you know, when I started, there was one other alternative Latino guy, a guy named, what's John's last name? He was Kyle Kinane's roommate for years. And then now we have a bunch, and I've got a bunch of those guys are talking about being bi and shit over there now. And I'm like, okay, this is cool.
My gosh.
We're like incubating something over there that like, it's okay to like be weird. And cholos are, once you get cholos talking, they're some of the fucking weird. Before the shutdown, we had newer like cholo comics that were like seeing it's okay to talk about weird shit. And they're like fucking Martians. So I'm very excited, like I said, in the next 5 to 10 years to like see what comedy is going to come out of Los Angeles. But for right now, absolutely nothing's happening.
Well, it's kind of reminding me of like Hannibal and Blurt, almost, of like finding this niche within a community that has been like, oh no, we do stuff this way, but it's like, oh no, there's a guy that would be at Chatterbox just like head to toe Dodgers gear, and then talking about his depression, and you're like, this is wild to see.
So yeah, I am very stoked about that. I'm very proud of the Chatterbox and everything we've done over there, but you know, we'll see. I'm actually very grateful for this time in COVID too, because it's allowed me to be thoughtful and to figure out my career trajectory and everything I really want to do. So I'm very excited to be here. I'm excited to be your friend. And it feels like we should start doing...
Yeah, doing stuff. I mean, the thing, I'm so glad you said that. I mean, I feel like it was maybe a couple years ago, but I was always so intimidated by you because... Like early, I mean, I moved here like 3 times, and I probably met you in the first time, and you very much were like LA. You were, I mean, you wore a Dodgers hat and stuff, but also like you were part of that crew of like the LA comedians who were starting to get a break. And I was like, I think I was here by myself. There weren't a lot of Chicago comedians. And I was like, I knew I wanted to stay here in LA, and I also wanted to be a part of the community. And I was like, and I would go to Chatterbox, like hang out with Wit. And I think maybe I did a showcase there early on and I wasn't friends with you yet. But I was like, shit, I don't care if anyone laughs in this room except for Steve behind the bar. Like, and so like that was like you were really like a rite of passage back then. And you know, I've been here for what, like 8 years on and off. And yeah, it's
well that's very sweet, CJ. My only problem with you is you just kept quitting. So I did not know what to think. So I'm like, I love stand up. I love stand up. Like, you know, I used to be a youth pastor. So a lot of that like bleeds out in my stuff. And I love stand up like I used to love Christ. And so I don't, I don't care about the business. I care about really the spirit of the thing. I think of stand ups as like Jedi Knights. I think about what we really do is so separate from the business. Trust me though. I mean, in a way I'm kicking myself because I would love to have dental insurance right now. And so I'm pivoting to that kind of stuff. But there is a thing where I'm like, I don't care about any of it. I care about what happens in the room. And what happens in the room, we comedians can do one of those. It's one of those rare things in this fucking dumb modern world where we can make magic happen. And so so you to me are like someone who kept backsliding. I was like, does this fool love Christ
or not?
You know? Which you're always very
the
funny.
The thing is...
And then I'm over there like cutting my skin for Christ, you know, like I'm like too in to stand up.
Megan,
no,
I'm
fully committed to quitting, but I kept, but then, but all of my friends were in stand up and then I went out and tried to hang out with regular people and it just wasn't happening, you know? So there, I'm like the definition of trapped in this community. So I was I just got to do it then.
My heart has opened up though. Since then I have gotten very good where I realized that. It can't be, it's different things to different people at different times. Mm-hmm. For it to be as wonderful as it is, it's just like Christianity. You know, you don't need a bunch of pastors. Sometimes if people are just good people and they're funny and they're present when they're at an open mic, if you're dicking around at an open mic, fuck you. But if you're present and you're trying to make the room laugh, like I said, in this moment, if you're doing your best, then that's enough for me. I mean, who cares about what I think? But also in my, I've realized like, okay, even, you know, at Chatterbox, we've got a couple of old guys that are like 65 that come and half of what they say is like some stupid sometimes. Half of what they say is very funny. And it's like, what am I going to say that this guy's not trying to get JFL? So fuck this guy. Like, what a moron I would be. This is stand up is a gift. And so if someone thinks of it as a hobby and they live to do it, as long as they're trying to grow, as long as they're trying to get better, that's all that matters to me.
A 65-year-old guy at an open mic loves stand up more than all of us, too. You know, because it's like they're at. Sir, you may not know this. There is no future for you. They, you know, my niece who's 4 has a better shot at this point. So like his love for it is so pure. We had you on today because we wanted to do an LA specific episode. We are the city of champions, as a truck in our neighborhood is painted. So we know that. And love him, love him. I've got on my Dodgers, my Los Angeles Dodgers shirt that then has a basketball on it. Yeah. He's got on his Dodgers hat. We are fully adopted the LA sports scene. And no one even really gets that mad at me because I've lived through lots of short shirt teams and I can pick this and they have the same colors. You know, it's just fun.
So. Steve, no one's gotten mad at us. Why do you think that? Like, I'm like publicly known as a Bulls fan like years ago. And like, my only legitimate reason is that I love LeBron and he came to the Lakers and now I'm a Dodgers fan. Like, but no one's mad at me. Can you explain why maybe?
I think if your love is pure and you don't seem to be like a tail riding anyone's tails or anything, although arguably you're doing that with LeBron, but LeBron's such a good man go along with his talent. I don't think anyone could hate on that at all. So plus this is it. You're done as comedians, as entertainers. You guys have both done the things where you move from there to there and then LA is the final place. So you're going to live here for the rest of your life, probably. So how could anyone hate on you for that?
Yeah,
that's true.
Well, and CJ has fully adopted the Lakers fandom where he shits on the Clippers all the time. So he, you know, he's really walking the walk in that way.
And then also we live in Highland Park and Eagle Rock, and anyone familiar, like it is essentially the Philippines and Eagle Rock. And I didn't know until I moved here that part of being Filipino is loving the Lakers. And Kobe is bigger than Jesus, I found out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And if you go to the Eagle Rock Plaza, it's all Kobe jerseys.
You know, I didn't like Kobe for years. I actually stopped after the sexual assault, all the sexual assault stuff come up, I just kind of checked out. And I didn't like, ultimately, I didn't like how he was kind of a ball hog. Like, I just, it really bothered me. I remember we had an open mic at the Glendora Continental during his last game. And he scored, what did he score, 70 points or something crazy like that? And I was just like, 60. For like 50, and he went like 50 for like, I mean, just like shot 60 shots or something. Where I was just to me, I'm just like, who are very much loved teams, as you'll see in my choices later on. I very much love teams and collectives. And I just kind of thought he was like you piece of shit. Like I just, he bothered me. So it was very hard for me to get in to the Lakers until LeBron came. And he is such a good man and such a good team player. And then, of course, when Kobe died, I had to like have a spiritual reckoning where I was like,
we all did.
We all fuck up. You know, we've all like gotten ourselves into terrible situations, you know, especially as a man and understanding now. You know, I thought it used to be funny to try to make a girl not use a condom. I thought that was funny. And now I know. Now I know, like, oh, you know, I would never sneak one off or anything, but I would just try to talk them out of it. Like, come on, please. But now I realize that all of these things are fucked up. So I've been at least, you know, maybe not as bad as Kobe, but I've been terrible in my ways too. And so I've accepted Kobe into my heart as a son now of the city. And I do think that's one of the great things he did in his death is unify the city in such an amazing way.
Yeah.
But I grew up with the Dodgers, huge Dodger fan. Didn't get into the Dodgers big time until maybe about 7 or 8 years ago when they got Spectrum, got the exclusive, Time Warner got the exclusive cable rights to them. This is such a funny thing. My older brother and my uncle obsessed with the Dodgers. I've always been around Dodgers. We'd go to one or two games and thing, but I always thought it was so boring. And then they bought that, and the Chatterbox had Time Warner, and nobody had Time Warner. Everyone had DirecTV. And so we would start suddenly get like 3 or 4 cholos would come in when I would work at the Chatterbox on Thursdays and Fridays at 6 o'clock. They would always just be there. And so I'm just watching this game with them. And then you're like, oh, I like this guy with the red hair. Oh, and then I like this. Yeah, this person's funny. Yeah. Oh, I like this song. And you're just like, I think this is what happened. My dad wasn't into sports. I was like, this is, I guess, how little kids get into sports. This is how everyone gets like, oh, this guy's funny. I like when he smiles. Like I just like a little kid. I started to get into the Dodgers 7 or 8 years ago. Also as a way to connect with my brother, who I love dearly, and he loves Dodgers too much. And so then we started going to games, and then Julia's from LA. So it's like now I'm as diehard as anybody, but it was a real choice. And it was, you know, I don't know if I'd be a diehard fan if Time Warner wouldn't have bought the exclusive rights to their cable.
Yeah.
But that's how everybody feels about WGN and the Cubs. Like it's baseball specifically is so almost like dependent on these cable deals in a way that other sports don't seem to be. And maybe that's because they're more mainstream and like just reach more people. But yeah, you're basically going to be a baseball fan of the team that they're showing on your local station, like regardless. Yeah. And I just love that. Should we take a break and then come back with our picks? Okay, we'll be right back. We are back. Steve, you are going to lead us off, no pun intended, with your third pick for, I don't even think I've said the topic yet, greatest LA athletes.
Yeah.
A lot of wiggle room in that headline, too.
Yeah, I...
if you're not ready, I can go.
Oh, no, I'm ready. And I don't know how... I've listened to your guys' podcast, so I know how it goes. I don't feel like it's as competitive as other shows like this. And so my third one, I'm going to pick third just so I can say it because I don't want any of you guys to beat me to it. But I do think Serena Williams is is like one of LA's like sons and daughters. She's the best woman tennis player and arguably one of the best tennis players that's ever lived out of Compton, California. Mm-hmm. Her dad, just made a decision. I don't know if you guys knew this before they were born, those two, Venus and Serena. And I even have a hard time saying Serena without saying Venus because Serena, obviously, if you're playing against, if your older sister's the best tennis player in the world, she is going to make you that good. So I do feel, mm-hmm. I do have trouble saying, but you know, Serena's won 23 Grand Slam titles. Her dad wrote a 78-page plan before they were born and said, I am going to shape these and women and mold them into this white sport where they can win and make, be successful and make a ton of money. And he actually did that. Arguably, he's a monster. Sure. In so many ways, I don't think, because they moved out of here pretty quick, but, you know, they're from Compton, for Christ's sake, man. That, yeah. to me is yeah. what, like, you know, we, Los Angeles should be fucking proud of these women.
Yeah. I played on a tennis court, must have been 2 years ago, and it had like a giant banner that said it was like their childhood court, or maybe they had like played there. It was over on the west side. Like it was Inglewood, Compton adjacent for sure. And it brought tears to my eyes. Like even to, and it was in kind of this park that didn't seem like it had been kept up in the way that a park maybe in the Palisades would have, you know, like the pool was kind of fucked up. There were kids like running everywhere. And I'm like, this tennis court complex exists because of these two sisters solely. And it was just really, really beautiful. And you do see their mark on the city still.
Their dad used to go around to all the private clubs and beg to let them have their used balls. And they were brought up on the public courts wow. of Los Angeles, of places like Compton. Their first coach, who they kind of jacked over in a lot of ways, a man by the name of Rick Mocky, flew out here from Florida. He had some of the best tennis players at the time. And he said he watched Venus and he was like, well, this was kind of a waste or whatever. He just didn't see anything that great. And then when Venus said, can I go to the bathroom or whatever? And the dad said, yeah. And he said he watched her handstand walk to the bathroom like 20 feet away. This is real. And he said,
because that's what Richard made them do.
Yes. And then he's like, yeah, oh, yeah. He told him, oh, you're going to have, you have the Michael Jordan of tennis on your hands. And then Richard, their dad said, I have two Michael Jordans on my hands. Wow. The younger sister, of course, being Serena, who's won 23 Grand Slams to Venus's 7 Grand Slams. Yeah. She's amazing. She was number one in 2002 for the first time, and then again in 2017. How many fucking athletes could say something like that? It's completely insane.
And tennis, your cap is like 22. Like you truly do not play. This is why 15-year-olds can win Wimbledon, because the window is so small and they've, her, you know, and Federer to his credit and Nadal and that mess, Djokovic, they have extended the playing career for tennis players. They've totally changed the game. Ugh.
And real quickly, what is their standing relationship with their father?
It's good. They
have love.
They would say, like, just don't come to the games anymore. We don't want anything like that, which is, these are healthy boundaries to have. Yeah, it's funny, you know, to your point, Megan, I just finished the John McEnroe book. I think it's called, like, it's I'm Not Joking or something like that, or I'm Being Serious. And he talks about being 25 and being like, I was an old man at 25, or when I was 30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, literally at 35, you join like the old guy circuit. I forget what it's called, but for her to be that good,
I think
for
the senior long, tour, yeah.
Yeah, the senior tour, that's what it's called, yeah. I like old guy tour better.
Is yeah. the book called You Can't Be Serious?
Yes.
Yeah, that's like what he yelled at yes. the man.
Yeah, yeah, mad. Yeah. That's, by the way, a great book. I'm not a huge tennis fan, but that book made me where I'm like, oh, shit, I guess I'm getting old because I'm going to start getting into watching tennis and shit. Because he was talking about everything. And he did bring up the Williams sisters, of course, and just we all know how they changed the game in terms of physicality and strength and power. And you know, I did mention it briefly, but this is a white sport. This is a traditionally white sport. They went in there and faced, you know, I just watched a doc with them. And I forget, I think it was somewhere in San Diego where, you know, they were booing Serena and people were calling
it. It was in Palm Springs.
Yeah, Palm Springs and they called it.
What Indio? Is it? It was in Indio, but it's called like
Indian Wells.
You know, yeah. Indian Wells. Yes. It's Indian Wells. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They promised, they vowed to never play it again. And then they since went back, and it was extremely emotional when Serena returned.
They're incredible. They've made so much money. Serena over $93 million. Venus over $43 million. That's just in prize money. Forget about endorsements. I'd love to see two black women from Compton making a shitload of money. Serena's married to the co-founder of Reddit now. This to me is a real rags to riches American story, and I'm proud like that they are from Los Angeles.
Oh gosh, I almost feel like we don't go on after that. you want me to go?
Yeah.
Okay. So great number three pick, Steve. My number three pick is kind of obscure, and I wanted to put football players on the list. I thought I was going to go with a Rams player, and I didn't. I ended up going a different direction. And this person made my list because he is involved with the O.J. Simpson trial and the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
O.J. Simpson.
No. That's just a 1-2 punch. I can't deny. And it's Marcus Allen. So his ex-wife was on Real Housewives, which I'll get to. Marcus Allen, born in San Diego, but then played at USC and is one of like four players ever to win the Heisman and the Super Bowl MVP. He still is tied for the NCAA record for most or for like over 2,000 yards with Ricky Williams and Ron Dane. I mean, this is NCAA royalty. And then he went on to be on the Raiders, which I genuinely forgot were in Los Angeles and was offensive rookie of the year, and then went on to lead them to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl.
With that, when they were in LA?
When they were in LA. I think like the first 8 years of his NFL, maybe it was less than that, but he ended up having a falling out with Al Davis, and they had a lot of issues. Al Davis publicly called him a cancer of the team. Marcus Allen made a claim that Al Davis was trying to ruin his career and keep him out of the Hall of Fame. He was not successful in doing that. He went elsewhere, and his stats are truly incredible. I mean, he is like a powerhouse and a hunk. So then he married this woman named Catherine Edwards. I think that's her name. And it is rumored, and it was brought up at the trial, that Marcus and Nicole Brown Simpson were having an affair.
Oh, yeah.
And OJ, you know, knew that, and that like added to blah, blah, blah. Apparently, Marcus and Catherine were subpoenaed to testify and fought the subpoena and ended up not testifying at the trial. But they are mentioned in Faye Resnick's book. I think he's mentioned in some of the, you know, like the David Schwimmer trial series that happened. And it was brought up on The Real Housewives a lot, a lot. They got married. Him and Catherine got married at OJ's house, too.
Yeah, I'm looking
so are we
at
pro OJ now.
No, we're not pro OJ. No.
So are you?
I'm looking at Catherine Edwards right now. Yeah, she's beautiful.
Blonde,
yeah, Marcus blonde, Allen, beautiful. One of the best running backs of all time. He was tangential to one of my picks that I'm not going to do because you picked Marcus Allen. But at one point, Bo Jackson and Marcus Allen were playing on the same team. An amazing Raiders. And this was happening, I think, when I was like 10, 11 years old. Wasn't a big football fan, but this is, I remember little kids coming in to fucking in Raiders jerseys, either Marcus Allen, either Bo Jackson. This was huge in Los Angeles at the time. I've always loved Marcus Allen and have been tempted to buy a Marcus Allen jersey, but I just can't rep the Raiders like that.
Well, what if you got a USC jersey? He was number 33 and they've retired that number because of him.
That's not a bad idea. I have a problem wearing a university jersey and I haven't gone to college. I've just seen too many old Mexican guys doing it. And I'm like, this is sad. You'll see too. They'll have like the plate, the plate placards. And I'm like, bro, you did not go to that school. To me, it's like I don't mind representing a pro team because I'm from the city, but representing a school feels like I'm lying to someone. So I don't know if I could do that.
Oh, so the record he holds still in the NCAA is most games with 200 rushing yards. So he has that tie with Ron Dayne and Ricky Williams. That's, I mean,
yeah
he was incredible. And then to be incredible in college as a running back and then incredible in the pros to the point where you win Super Bowl MVP, that is very, very hard to do, almost impossible.
What university did he go to? So Marcus Allen,
he went to USC.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. No kidding.
USC, yeah.
Yeah. That's fucking
no,
cool.
I mean, and also you can speak on this is that the Raiders, like in pop culture, just became so huge. And he was part of that, of like NWA, like the script Raiders hat. I mean, obviously Marcus Allen, like Bo Jackson. I mean, I don't know where were they were in LA at the time during like the NWA's origin, I think, but it just became such an LA staple, Raiders gear. I mean, yeah, LA people really rep the Raiders no matter what.
I mean, it's so cool. If they were here like that now, I would be a diehard Raiders fan. But when I was little and we went to church, you know, the idea of like pirates and Raiders and being rowdy, it was like these people do not love Christ correctly. So I remember,
yeah.
I think that was really in my heart where I was like, this does not feel Christ-like to me. But now I think it would be very cool, like to have a team like the Raiders, especially now that we have, what do we have? Two pro teams here and they both fucking suck.
Yeah.
So that's, and I used to be a Rams fan. I've been to games recently too. So I guess I would say that, but
yeah.
They just still don't feel like Los Angeles is yet. So hopefully that changes.
And they've been to the Super Bowl.
No, and I feel really bad for the Chargers.
It's so crazy.
Because at least the Rams have some amount of history here. The Chargers, they just moved a team. What is happening, my brother? Sorry, guys. Golly.
Your brother option on this podcast now?
Megan, if your brother calls you like right now, what do you think he's calling you about? Is he calling you about football?
He definitely wants to talk about the Colts, but then for me to FaceTime with my nieces.
Oh, okay. That's very sweet.
Yeah, I FaceTime probably every other day with my nieces.
I love my nephews, but they don't even... I mean, that's the difference between boys and girls traditionally, is that my nephews don't give a fuck about me. They're 9 and 12. Uh-huh. Now, the 12-year-old talks to me some, but the 9-year-old is like... nagging me half the time. He's like really hot.
Yeah.
The 9-year-old's like a model and he looks like Keanu because he's like half Japanese, a quarter white, like all this like cool shit. And the dude, I finally bought him up. He has his birthday last week. I bought him some like weird box of Pokemon, you know, for like $80. And he was flipping out about that. And he actually FaceTimed me for that and thanked me. And I was like, well, shit, thank God.
Yeah, but it's present based.
Yeah.
You know, like my nephew, I'll be like, Bobby, he will not be speaking to anyone. And I'm like, you need to come over and FaceTime if you want me to buy you a tablet. Okay, that's what we're doing now. I need a little bit of attention and then I'll get you an iPad, parental settings off for a while, dog. I don't even care. Okay, CJ, you want to give us your number three?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me not to do all basketball.
I was assuming you were, and so yeah, I went that's heavy, why you would no obscure. Basketball.
So I'm going to start off, I'm going to say Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and this will start a little bit of a trend of, so not only six MVPs, oof, five NBA titles with the Lakers, but also... And I got into this a little bit last night. He like also entered Hollywood. Like he really embraced being, you know, this big player in the NBA, but also living in LA and really feeding into that, you know, Showtime moniker. Like he was training with Bruce Lee, was in Game of Death, obviously, but then also in Airplane and a bunch of other movies. And recently he was a staff writer on Veronica Mars. So like, this is, you know, years after, but he is still, and I met his daughter once and she was like a screenwriter. So he, to me, is like a quintessential, just like LA athlete, LA icon. And so, yeah, one of the greatest LA athletes, in my opinion.
So
and very cool and like, yeah, just progressive and just responsible for a ton of movements. And yeah.
I saw him in like a... in like an authentic Game of Thrones costume for a bit that they were having him do for the ESPYs, and it was so fucking awesome. Like, he's so tall and then he's in this just like wildling outfit and I'm like, this is the greatest moment of my life.
Well, he's also, you didn't mention it, but part of some of the greatest UCLA basketball teams that have ever lived.
Yes,
he was one of the greatest collegiate basketball players of all time. Not to mention, he had a really great couple of seasons on 21 Jump Street. I don't know if you guys caught any of those episodes, but
I didn't know he was a regular on
Yeah, Johnny Depp would go talk to him, or Richard Grieco would. I forgot why, but I believe he played a coach. I don't believe he was a cop, but they would go like talk to him about shit sometimes. So I like him too. He's a very independent thinker. He'll do a lot of contrarian pieces. I don't agree with him all the time, but I do think it's very healthy to have independent thinkers in. A lot of times, you know, we are out here now. There's a lot of stuff we wouldn't say publicly that we talk about amongst ourselves. And I think it's really cool that he has the balls to like write an op-ed piece for Time that kind of goes against like stereotypical views a lot of times. So Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is an amazing athlete, one of the best of all times. And he appears to be a really great human being as well. Great pick.
Yeah. Obviously a talented writer too. I mean, I want to know, who's his agent? Is he in the WGA? Did he have to fire them because of the, you know, what's going on there?
Should we give him a staffing boost?
Yeah, let's give him a WGA staffing boost. Kareem, we need to get him on Young Sheldon. Okay, it's been too long. Should we just go into our seconds?
Yeah, let's go into our seconds. All right. Time is.
Okay, so Steve, you're up again with your number two.
All right, my number two, it's controversial because I'm kind of picking a team, but I just couldn't figure out which one of these three guys to pick. But it's got to be the Zephyr skate team out of Long Beach. I'm talking about Tony Alba, Jay Adams, and Stacy Peralta, who reinvigorated, who basically created what we know skateboarding to be now. It was virtually dead. They were surfers, and they became, you know, there's parts of Santa Monica south of Wilshire used to be poor. The area between Venice and Santa Monica was run down, and they took a lot of techniques from surfing, created street skating as we know it, created pool skating as we know it, and then were the first steps to vertical skating as well. So I'm talking about...
Are these the Z-Boys? Dogtown and Z-Boys?
Yeah, the Dogtown and Z-Town boys. Jay, I mean, they're all... Like I said, all three of them have done such like amazing, cool things. Jay Adams was kind of the punk version of them. I forgot the name of the guy who... He's the hairdresser in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. What's that guy's name?
I've forgotten.
Yeah, it's that guy. He plays Jay Adams in the movie, and he ends up being real like quasi cholo. Yeah, that whole ghetto scene is like they took a lot of cholo and Latino kind of influenced and created the art and all of that stuff. They were just poor. And that's one reason why I love them so much is that they were just poor and skateboarding. And they ended up getting rich and super influential. Like I said, Jay Adams was like a punk rocker. He never made that much. But Stacy Peralta created Paul Peralta, the Bones Brigade, some of the hugest things. Discovered Tony Hawk, Steve Caballero, all those guys. And then Tony Alva made his own company, Alva, got super rich, one of the greatest skaters of all time. So those guys created modern skateboarding as we know it, right down the street, not that far away. And I don't think they really get the credit. There was the movie and, of course, the documentary. But if you look at them, there's like my kind of white guys. You could tell like white guys that grow up in brown neighborhoods, you know, like white guys that are still Dodger fans or like, I'll die for you, fool, like that kind of thing. White guys like, you know, they're in like Fast and Furious franchise. That's why Paul Walker was meant so much to like so many Mexicans is because there's always like a few white guys like that where it's like, that fool, like he wears Vans and shit, and it's like, I love you, fool. Like, you're dope.
Thinking of
and
wit.
So, yeah. So I think the Zephyr boys, all three of them, if I had to choose, I guess I would pick Tony Alva because he was more cool than Stacy Peralta.
You don't have to. Yeah. You can have all of them.
Thank you.
Is LA skateboarding capital of the world?
Southern California, yeah.
Yeah. I've never lived in a place where it, like, skateboard culture, skateboard photo shoots. And I'm so intimidated. Like, we have a famous skate park right by our house. And when I walk by, I'm like, I hope they think I'm not a mom. Like, I just want them to think I'm like cool. Like, I'm almost like inclined to just like have a blunt hanging out of my mouth to be like, I'm chill, I'm down. But I don't. I just sort of like move away from them and they see my little, you know, my Lululemon and are like, fuck this bitch. But it's for sure, LA feels so much like into skateboarding.
Yeah, I mean, it's derived from surfing. So they basically would wake up and you could only surf from, you know, surfing's dead here in LA and Southern California by like 10 a.m. So they needed something to do with the rest of the day, along with the invention of, because they used to use, like, I think the wheels used to be clay. So it was a meeting of technology as well. At the same time when they were coming up, the polyurethane wheel was created. So they were able to, used to have to eat shit hard, which they do now. But at least the polyurethane whale allowed them to, like, cover more ground and be a little more off-roady with the shit. Really, truly create the street style that we know of today.
Yeah, we gotta watch that documentary again. I saw it like 15 years ago. And yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, yeah, Whit and I moved to Highland Park before it started to get gentrified because of the skate park. Garvon's over here. Like, skate culture is so big. And the thing is, Steve, like, that's such a great pick because, you know, when we were doing research, we go through like the top 50 lists that are already on the internet. It's not even mentioned, no. But it's like, that should be in the top 10.
Yeah,
on these people's lists.
Yeah, that's why I knew you were going to pick all the fucking Lakers. So I was like, all right, what can I bring to the table? And so
and you're bringing it.
Yeah. And I was always too fat. I had multiple boards when I was in fourth and fifth grade, always too fat to even ollie.
I love a fat skateboarder. Oh my god, I love it. Like, I almost want a Christmas ornament that's a fat skateboarder. I think they're so
way
fun.
To surfing Santa. So
it was funny.
That's a great pick.
Thank you. What's your pick, Megan?
Go.
No.
Yeah, no. You. Okay.
We had the, okay.
Well.
We're just having too much fun here. Megan, what's your number two pick?
Okay, so I also was assuming CJ was picking all Lakers. and my number two pick is Cheryl Miller. Mm-hmm. Much in the way that we need Serena and Venus on this list, Cheryl Miller is the greatest... how do I say this? The greatest female basketball player who was never given the stage and accolades that she is deserving of. Born and raised here too, Riverside Polytech High School, then went to USC where she was a two-time NCAA champion, three-time Naismith Player of the Year. So she was the MVP of women's basketball three out of her 4 years. Her number 31, has been retired by the USC Trojans. She has won a gold medal. Everything that was available to her as a female basketball player, she accomplished. She excelled and was the best at every single thing. And sadly, there just was a ceiling back then. There wasn't a place for her to even necessarily like be in Europe. There were these like obscure leagues and she would do them and dominate them. But it just didn't have the mainstream appeal that even something like the WNBA has now. And I also think that she is so instrumental in creating her brother as an incredible basketball player. So she, you know, who's also from LA and played at UCLA. And so I feel is very Southern California as well. But Cheryl, like, played here, is here. She just defines it. Like, seeing her in those USC jerseys, like dunking, she's just incredible. And I want her to be in just like the sports hall of fame. Like, that's, she just deserves to be amongst the greats wherever they honor the greats.
Man, they just didn't, the WNBA didn't exist. Like, all they had was like the Olympics back then, right? Mm-hmm. What a bummer.
Yeah, it's
and
just,
she won a gold medal. You know, like, you're going to play in college. You win everything. You're going to play at the Olympics. You win everything. She was drafted by a men's league when she left college, but it just didn't, you know, and then she ended up having injuries that ended her career, but went on to coach, is one of the greatest female analysts of all time. You know, like, there's just never been anything in her life with regards to sports that she hasn't been the best at.
Well, and you talked about the Serena and Venus sort of dynamic coming up. We very much have Cheryl to thank for Reggie Miller.
Yeah.
Like, the, you know, the documentaries and the footage of their background battles and Reggie getting heckled from grade school on for them chanting her. It's like, you know, they heckled him by saying Cheryl Miller. It's like yelling to LeBron James, Michael. It's like, that's not a heckle. That is a compliment, you know, but to him, it fueled him to be as good as he is. But yeah, that's like if your sparring partner was Tyson or Holyfield or whatever. And yeah, it's just the NBA didn't have it together in time. And I'm almost like, did the NBA or WNBA not reach its peak early or like have that momentum because we didn't have someone like Cheryl early on?
Yeah, that's maybe. So funny because, yeah, it must have been so bad for him when just being called a woman was a put down to have someone just saying your sister's name, how angry it made him.
Yeah.
Just shooting out there longer. Please don't ever call me a woman, you know?
Yeah. It's like, you mean the greatest female basketball player of all time?
They also look so much alike, you know, like they have an uncanny resemblance and they're like sibling love. I mean, they just really. The Miller family means so much to me. Obviously.
That's so great. Yeah. I didn't realize she's from Los Angeles. Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Great pick.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, CJ, you want to give us your number two?
Yeah, my number two, again, very almost like we can talk about it. Let's not spend too much time on it. But I guess the position, because I think people, especially now, will be, you know, it's not controversial positioning, but I'm going to say Kobe Bryant. And yeah, he is L.A. Like right now, you can't drive more than 2 miles without seeing a mural of him. Won 5 titles here, had opportunities to leave, stuck around. And, you know, he to me is just he is L.A. He was that unifier, like you said. And yeah, I mean, I also had that same thing with you, Steve, where and I said it on our very first episode of this podcast where I was like, I hate Kobe Bryant. And the thing is, it was like an active hate. Like, and it was something that I think he manufactured a little bit was that villain role. It was like, yes, I am going to be the ball hog because I'm the only one who can do it for us. And he absolutely did do it for LA and very much put LA on his back. And won it with some weird, he won it with a Shaqless team. I think like he kind of fulfilled, he like put that promise out there, like I'm going to win this for myself and for LA without Shaq and put together kind of like an odd team to do that and won 2 with that team and just always, you know, kind of was like a representative of LA. So yeah, I think he's one of the greatest LA athletes of all time.
And you know, as much as I said those things earlier, I was in my early 20s in that first run with Shaq and then, of course, with him and Gasol. But, I mean, those 3 championships with Shaq and Kobe were some of the most amazing experiences, sports experience I had in my life, being in big parties and going crazy. But I remember that that was like a Hack-a-Shaq time where the last minute or two would literally be 45 minutes in the last minute or two of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like, give me a fucking break. But all of those wins, the comebacks against the Sacramento Kings, that series, all of those things loom so huge in my personal memory. And, you know, I know people talked about when he died that he had mentioned, you know, I want to die young because it's the only way to be great. But, you know, it truly is like he instantly will always be thought of as a Los Angeles legend, like in a way that. Yeah. I don't know if he would have just gotten older and passed away would have happened. Now he got gunned down at the prime of his youth. It's terribly sad and tragic, not to mention his daughter, who is going to be the best basketball player that's ever lived. It's so tragic, but it also, I think, allowed us to see him as a human being and with grace and love in a way that we may not have seen him before. Or if he would have even been open up to that. Although it does appear that his kids were softening him and like helping him to become a better, more loving person. So, I mean, you can't fucking go wrong with Kobe Bryant. I mean, what a fucking pick.
It's making me think, is there a professional sports franchise that cares more about their legends and legacy and taking care and bringing like their stars back into the organization forever more than the Lakers? Maybe the Yankees? Like, I don't know enough
about the Yankees or Boston.
But they just, but, I mean, even this LeBron contract that just happened and they talk about Kobe's contract and like, they really just love to be like, if you were a Laker, then like, you're going to get one of these funny jackets and you're going to have a photo with Cookie and Magic in their suite at some point. Yeah. Like you are part of the family forever. If in a way that feels so much stronger than any other organization I can think of.
Well, you know, it's a little hack to say, but, you know, for whatever reason, The owners really do buy into the storytelling and the myth aspect of Hollywood.
Yeah.
I mean, that they believe in it so strongly. And to your point, Megan, that when Magic says, I'm a part of this conglomerate buying the Dodgers, which, you know, who knows how involved he is, really? Everyone's like, wow, what a great idea. Like, we love it. What a unifying presence to have Magic Johnson over there, too. So, yeah, they're an incredible organization. They keep coming back with, you know, all these amazing stories, really. Shaq and Kobe, Kobe without Shaq and Paul Gasol, and now LeBron James and Anthony Davis, them giving them these huge contracts. They're an amazing organization. I'm really glad that I can love them again.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back with our number ones.
And we are back. Okay, so Steve, how we do this is since you're our guest, you're going to be our big grand finale. So Megan and I will pick our number ones and we'll close it out with you. So Megan?
Okay, so Kobe was my number one.
Okay.
But I had a person in number one that I took out, so I would like to honor them now. I do have some honorable mentions, and I don't think I'm taking any from anybody's because these are people that they are not on the list because their careers have not been long enough. They're still currently playing. Aaron Donald, I think, will go down as one of the greatest LA athletes. It seems like him and Sean McVay really have a vibe and a thing that you got to imagine you like playing in LA too. Like, I just don't know where else he would want to go.
Yeah.
So I hope for his sake and the city's sake that he stays here. And then also Clayton Kershaw. I think we will look back and be like, hell yeah, that is a white boy pitcher player. You know, like, that is, if there was a movie, he'd be in it as the white boy blonde pitcher. But I was so happy for him to, like, you know, get to win a World Series. And I know, like, how much they talked about the monkey on the back for Peyton. And I think Clayton was just as much. So it's got to be, like, such a relief and an excitement for him. So my number one is going to be a man I actually know so little about, but I hear his name probably once a week, and that's Sandy Koufax. Truly, like, Mr. Dodger, Mr. Baseball, a 7-time All-Star, 4-time World Series champion, 3-time Cy Young Award. He pitched 4 no-hitters. Even reading his stats, I'm like, yeah, he's like a legend. Like, Sandy Koufax is, the name is so much bigger than anything I've ever known, because you just hear it and you're like, oh, that's some old-timey guy who just lit it up. And he really fucking did, and just was on the Dodgers in Brooklyn, on the Dodgers here, just is the Dodgers. And I like think of him and Vin Scully as Dodgers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sandy Koufax, and a man of character too. Very kind, still strong with the organization. And, you know, he famously would not pitch on the Sabbath as a Jewish person. And this is a big deal when, like, being a Jewish person was, you know, it's still not the easiest thing sometimes, but where it was like, America hated Jewish people. So, Sandy Koufax, obviously, one of the best Dodgers of all time. I'm so glad I didn't pick him. I was very tempted to, and I'm glad I did it.
Okay, great. He was in my number one slot, and then I was like, I guess I just don't know him enough to, like, have him as my number one, and I moved him into honorable mentions. But then once Kobe was off, it's like, yeah, this is like who, if old men were making this list, this is who they would want as their number one. And you know, I got to give it to the old men sometimes.
And I'm all, is Sandler's character in Big Daddy named after? Inspired. His name is Sonny Koufax.
I don't know, CJ.
CJ's always looking for a Sandler connection on this.
Oh, that's a great name of a podcast, the Sandler Connection. All right, Steve, if you want another podcast.
All right, I'm writing it down.
All right, my number one pick.
I also have one other honorable mention I'm saying I'm not saying it because it may be someone else's pick, but I'll tell you guys after if it's not. Okay.
All right. My number one pick is Magic Johnson. I just, like, we talked about him a bunch on this. The thing to me is that he is not only, you know, we talked about a player, the Hollywood connection, an entrepreneur, businessman.
Don't forget Cookie.
Cookie, yeah. I mean, and don't forget, like, 2 years ago, people thought he was the most, like, dysfunctional Lakers GM. But they, since they've won, they are now, we're back to like Magic. Yeah, we love Magic. It is all because of him. And I think he is. I think like all these players, it's that legacy we're talking about of LA. Whether the team is currently bad, players are like, no, I want to go to LA because if we can win there, like it's easy to get players to come there for help. But also players saw Magic's career post the Lakers and go, we have almost a life after basketball if we can make it work in LA. And I think that's because of Magic. And I just think Magic Johnson, you just think LA. You think you even think the Dodgers now, like who knows how much he really does. He says he's a majority owner, but like, yeah, Magic Johnson to me is like LA outside of sports. He's just like, he could be the mayor.
He cares about the community.
And you know what? After the last few weeks, he should be the mayor.
Yeah.
He cares about the community and how he handled getting HIV. Anybody else would have been taken down by the thing. But he took it as an opportunity to make it a learning lesson. And he almost single-handedly destigmatized AIDS and HIV. And what it, you know, people used to write it off as just simply a gay disease when that meant a bad thing back then. But he was he put it on the face of someone we all knew and loved. He touched people's hearts and he practically overnight changed the way that the world viewed this deadly disease. And now, now that we found solutions and vaccines and stuff where you can't completely heal it, but you can easily live with it. I mean, I don't know how you can't like attribute a lot of that to Magic Johnson. Plus, he had a really bad talk show. You got to admire someone swinging for the fences.
Yeah. No, it's like, what bad, like, what's the worst he can do where people finally turn on Magic? It hasn't happened yet.
No, he's the greatest. He's the greatest Laker of all time.
Yeah. I also think his love and support of EJ is really something that you see mirrored. Not that Dwayne Wade took a page from his book, but like, Magic, it wasn't just HIV positive. He also had like a very public out child who is like very fluid within their gender and was like, yeah, this is my kid. What do you want to do or say? Like, you know, I'll fuck you up. You know, like he's just like, yeah, this is and that's obviously probably somewhat LA of but like. Never hid EJ, celebrated EJ, put EJ front and center.
Man, I would be stoked to meet Magic Johnson. I don't think about like being excited to meet people that much, but just talking about him like this, that would be like,
yeah,
that'd be really cool to meet Magic Johnson.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I would be thrilled to meet Cookie. Cookie's a legend to me. Cookie was like the first. Cookie made jeans like before they were like apple bottom. Maybe it was after, but it was like these are jeans for girls with big butts. And I was like, you know what, Cookie? Thank you. I had to get them hemmed. I had a pair of Cookie jeans, but like, you know, I've got a big butt, but then little short legs. So I had to go get my Cookies hemmed.
I had to get my Cookie jeans hemmed.
Oh, I love them. They came up so high. Ugh, she's an artist. Okay.
All right, Steve.
Steve, take us home. Any honorable mentions?
My honorable mentions, Wayne Gretzky. I know he's from Canada and the Oilers a lot, but to me, he made the Kings. He put the Kings. He made hockey in Los Angeles. So Wayne Gretzky's big. Oral Hershiser has always really touched my heart. He was so Christian and such a good man, too. When I was Christian, so that meant a lot to me. And then finally, for honorable mention, I've loved Lamar Odom for so long since he was originally a Clipper.
Oh yeah,
and then he came back for the Lakers. So he was never, you know, he was never that top guy. But Lamar Odom to me, like, I mean, I remember him in the Clippers when he was first came out of high school. I just loved him so much. So I love Lamar Odom, and then I fell in love with him even more. He picked Chloe, Chloe was always my favorite. And I just really love that. So Lamar Odom. And then finally, my number one choice of all time for best Los Angeles athlete. This is, you know, kind of personal. You'll know why. Obviously, Fernando Valenzuela for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Fernando Mania hit in 1981. I was too little, but growing up, I mean, I think I was three when that happened. So the rest of that time, I mean, he still was huge all the way through, I think, their 88 championship. So Fernando Valenzuela was huge in the Mexican community. Everyone knows that Chavez Ravine was cleared for Dodger Stadium. They kicked a bunch of Mexicans out of their house, promised them that they were going to be new projects full of houses, and then just made it Dodger Stadium. So the Mexican community in Los Angeles hated the Dodgers for years and years until fucking Fernando made it okay. They went and they got him, found him in Mexico, brought him back. he won his first 8 games. He won the Cy Young Award and Rookie of the Year in the same year. That's like never happened. And he led them that first year to a World Series championship. That was his big year. He was always good. I think he played 10 complete games. They don't even do this anymore, but he played 10 complete games. He had his first shutout in 1990, so almost 10 years after he came to the league. Just really, you know, Mexicans have been getting the shaft for so long. I think when you think about America, America to me has always been whites, the white and black story. It's whites versus blacks. But, you know, Mexicans, we've always been in the back cooking. And I do think that we're coming up. It's getting to the time now where it's third generation and fourth generation, and we're not worried about our relatives getting shipped back home yet. So we're going to start coming out from out of the rocks. And I do think that you're going to see a lot more Mexican superstars, not only in the area of sports, but in entertainment as well. But the first real big superstar for me and for us and for the Los Angeles Dodgers is Fernando Valenzuela.
Beautiful.
I mean, even the guy, and I'm so sad that his name is escaping me right now, who was the closer for this team. It's like,
Julio.
He means so much to the Mexican community. And this is now 40 years later. Like, it's still
so much
so
that I
important.
Tried to claim him.
You did? You thought he was Filipino?
I was just like, is he Filipino or Mexican?
Well, he had eye surgery. So he does have an eye. So I get why you were maybe confused.
Yeah,
for a
Julio,
little bit.
Man. Yeah, but Fernando Mania, there was nothing like it. I remember being little and just, I mean, and I loved him too. He was 19 when he first got here, 20 by the end of that first season. But he was a little he was a little chubby guy. If you've seen him, he looks terrible. He looks just absolutely terrible. Terrible skin. He looked like he had a beer gut, a little fat Mexican guy who just came up and lit up the pitcher's mound. Obviously influential to me and my lifestyle. So he'll always go down as my absolute favorite Dodger. And I don't think that, you know, this LA's full of Mexicans. And I don't think that the Dodgers would be such a Mexican team if they would have never had Fernando Valenzuela. So I'm glad he did. He made it okay to love the Dodgers again.
After they did a terrible, terrible thing to the Mexican community.
I wish they would find some way to say they're sorry too, make a statue or something. Because it's not like, everybody, it's like America too with slavery. It's like, we all know what happened. Just say sorry. Mm-hmm. It means so much in the world. If you just you know, have the president.
I took my.
Go on.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm the done. Stadium is just so. The stadium's so beautiful. Like, and it's on this hilltop. Like, when I took my parents, they were like, this is where you put a stadium. And I'm like, yes, but a little tricky past there. My honorable mention that is just worth noting because I think of him as the Rams is Eric Dickerson.
Ooh, great.
Like that. I don't even see other Rams jerseys out here. Like, no one has a Jared Goff jersey. So you would see maybe some Gurley. He's gone. You just see people in vintage Eric Dickerson Rams jerseys. And then you're like, okay, you've been with the team for a long time.
Great call. Yeah, I remember. Right. Yeah.
Steve, you have truly one of the funniest Twitters. Like, if people were like, you can have 5 Twitters that you're still allowed to look at, you would be on my 5. So please tell our listeners where they can find you.
Thank you so much, Megan. That means a lot. You can find me at Big Hern on Twitter, Hernia on Instagram. You check out, I plug all my podcast shit there, so check those out. Then thank you guys so much for having me on. I had a blast.
Absolutely. Well, we hope we can see you and Julia in person soon when things are better. Thank you so much, Steve, for doing it.
Thank you.
And you can find me at CJ Toledano on everything. Megan?
At Megan Gailey on Twitter at Bedden. CJ's good.
Betting Megan Gailey. Her new
Better Megan Gailey.
Sports betting Instagram handle.
Betting Megan. Ooh, that is fun. I'm so bad at betting on sports, though.
We'll
pitch
it to somebody.
Not good. And gosh, guys, happy holidays. It's not even getting scary. It's staying scary.
it's gotten scarier.
Staying scary and escalating towards scarier. So be safe. Keep yourself safe. safe, your family safe, wear a mask. Yep. Carl Anthony Towns has had 7 family members die of COVID.
Insane.
Now, this is an NBA.
And he has to play for the Timberwolves.
Superstar, and he's lost 7 family members. Wear a fucking mask, please. And thank you so much for listening. Rate, review, and we will have more Greatest for you next week.
Bye.
The Greatest is a production of iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.